that bad. The little money from the crops he raised, well, it pays the bills we made. Oh, life had kicked him down to the ground. When he tried to get up, life would kick him back down. One day, Papa called me to his dying bed, put his hands on my shoulder, then in tears he said, he said, Badgers, I'm depending on your son to pull the family through. My son, it's all left up to you.
But they don't quite know that they don't know that we are all in the same category.
Well, Clarence Carter is. Yeah, and Mr. Patches himself, people think of Ray Charles all the time. They think of Jose Feliciano.
You're right.
Yeah. But Clarence Carter, same situation. How did you, when you were growing up in Montgomery, what was your first recollection of music and getting involved in it?
Well, I didn't. As a child, I never thought about being a musician. I used to, you know, like when I grew up, my growing up days was really not in Montgomery as such, because I went off to I was in an institutional school at the Alabama School for the Blind, and I was there, you know, like say 9.5 months out of the year. So I really grew up in what that famous racetrack they got over there now in Talladega. But, you know, at that time, they didn't have a racetrack. But
right.
That's practically where I really grew up, you know, up there. Because we, they centralized us all in one place where we all could get taught the same thing at the same time. Hmm. So, you know, though my home was in Montgomery, I mostly spent my time in Talladega. But in Talladega, we had, you know, the most schools will do, you'll have, we had little gospel groups singing. We'd have, later on, we had, they started teaching us band instruments. And I think about that time was the time I really started thinking seriously about music, whenever they started teaching us, you know, the marches. And it was quite a unique situation there. We had schools for the blind, and we had schools for the deaf.
Hmm.
And what they would do, they would teach us, the blind kids, how to play the band instruments, which meant that we had a band, a marching band. And, of course, we didn't really march because we were all, you know, we were all blind. But what they would do, they would teach the deaf children. They'd had them a football team. So what they would do would be to take our band, the blind band, over to the stadium whenever the deaf children were playing another deaf school from, you know, from another state, football. So it taught us a lot of things all at one time. It taught us, you know, I know, you know, when I see high school games or things come on the TV now or college games, I know all about this setting because I was out there with the band, and it was quite a unique experience.
Now, you had a hard time getting into college, I guess, but, you know, at the time, being African-American in Alabama and also being blind.
Yeah, it was kind of difficult. You know, it's kind of difficult to, at that time, it was quite difficult to teach sighted people that they were no different from blind people, except that we just couldn't see. But my answer to when the president of the college was interviewing me and different teachers were interviewing me, I said, well, I think their concern was that they were not going to be able to teach me because everything they did, they knew they see to do it. And my explanation to that was, well, if you talk, I'm going to hear you. And when I hear you, I can learn. And, of course, they, you know, later on learned that that really was no problem. I mean, you know, you go in a classroom, you don't write on the blackboard all day. you know, you might put some things on the blackboard, but then there's always a student sitting next to you, and they're glad to read you what's on the blackboard.
Hmm. So you got through Alabama State, and you got a B.S. degree in music.
Yeah.
And then you connected with Calvin Scott, and the music career took off.
Well, I connected with Calvin Scott, and we started doing some things around Montgomery. And we really were about to sign our first contract with Rick Hall out of, well, not our first contract, but one in a series of contracts that we tried when we were young. You know, when you're young, you go and get with one company. If nothing happens, that doesn't dampen your spirit, not mine anyway. You just go keep up going till you find somebody that like what you're doing. And we were about to sign a big contract with Rick Hall over at Muscle Shoals, and then we had that car accident. And, you know, that kind of separated us.
Yeah. Calvin got seriously injured, right?
He got like a what they call nowadays a concussion. It wasn't really serious. I think what happened was he had a wife. I didn't have a wife. And I think she got frightened that that out on the road, you know, if you're a local person in one geographical location, it's hard for you to imagine driving all over the United States doing shows here, doing shows there. And I think his wife and his mother all got afraid that he was something bad was going to happen to him if he stayed out on the road. Whereas I didn't have that problem. My mother was the kind of person, if I told her I wanted to do something, and she figured if I said I wanted to do it, she thought I could do it. So, you know, I didn't have the problem of the pressure of, no, you need to leave this road alone. You're liable to get, you might get hurt. You might get killed, you know. And I think that's really what it was.
Should we mention that a song called Step by Step, which you performed with Calvin, is actually on a Rhino collection.
Right.
Called
And the reason for it was, that's how we met Rick Hall. I called to the studio and just booked us some time and then paid for it. And went in there, and that's where we cut Step by Step, and that's how Rick Hall heard us sing. But between the time that Rick heard us sing and the time he got back to us to sign a contract, we had that accident.
Right, and after that, you ended up going on your own and signing with Rick anyway.
Exactly. My thing to Rick was, I said, well, you know, yeah, well, there's no Clarence and Calvin anymore, but I'm still here. He said, well, I never heard you sing by yourself, but, you know, let's just try it. Come on up. Let's see what happens. And, you know, it was a lucky day for me in my life that I did go on up, you know. I knew he was taking a chance on me being able to do something, and I knew I wasn't going to get another one, not from him. And so I was going to have to make the most of it.
But I think maybe by separating from your partner, you had to force yourself to learn things like writing on your own and singing on your own and producing and all these things that you may not have known if you were working together.
I certainly wouldn't have. Well, now, the thing was when we had the little band together, most of the time Calvin did the singing. I really was more interested in playing the guitar, and then I wrote most of the songs. In fact, the writing of the song was really the key to Rick Hall being interested in signing me, because I wrote the songs and he wanted to publish the songs. So as a result of that, you know, he let me come on up to see if I could sing the songs. Well, it's kind of thing like, I used to sing a little while we had the band, but I wasn't eager to do a whole bunch of singing. Calvin used to do most of the singing because I always thought he could sing much better than me. But you know what happens? I mean, you know, just different things in your life make a turn. I sang for Rick. We put the record out. It did a little something. So here I am.
Well, the first one you put out was called "Tell Daddy About It," right?
Tell Daddy All About It.
Yeah.
I wrote that song in my record shop. I had a little record shop in Montgomery, and we used to have band rehearsal there every Wednesday night, and that's where I put the song together.
Now, songs like Slip Away and Too Weak to Fight and Patches all were hits. Did it change your life when you started making the charts and making some money?
Shucks. Oh, yeah, it changed my life quite a bit. But, you know, by that time, I was not a real youngster. I was, at that time, around, like 30-ish, 31, something to that, like that. So, though it changed my life, it didn't change my attitude toward people. It didn't make me think that I was better than anybody else. So it changed my life in a positive ways. Like, then I was able to buy a new suit when I wanted one, not when I could, you know, afford to get one, something to that effect. Or I was able to go to, you know, restaurants that I dreamed of going in my life. You know, things like that. And of course, you know, I think all young men want to see their mother happy. So I had always heard my mother say she wished she had a little restaurant. So when I started making some money, I went and bought some property and put in a restaurant for her.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting. Sometimes you never know what's going to cause success, and sometimes it's by accident. And I'm looking at some of the things, like, for instance, in your career, when they released Funky Fever, the B-side, Slip Away, ended up getting played and became a huge hit. Now, Funky Fever was also an R&B hit, but Slip Away turned out to be a major hit.
Major hit. But you know, the short story about that is, I always thought when the song Slip Away, I thought the song, when I, you'll not see me as a writer on the song, but the truth of the matter is, I did write the song. A friend of mine, Marcus Daniel, and I, we are the two who wrote the song.
Hmm.
But what happened is, if you know, back home, we had the band, and we all were close friends, and when we went up to Rick Hall to cut the material, instead of just, what shall I say, hogging all of the songwriting, even though I did it, I, you know, tried to include them on some of the writing of the songs. I didn't know then what I know now, that you don't do those kind of things, you know. But when you're just a tight group like that, and you mean more than just a musician with one another, you know?
Right.
And so the truth of the matter is that, yeah, Slip Away, I always thought was a hit record. Rick Hall thought that it was not a hit record. He'll tell you that today. So when he called me and said, well, we're going to put Funky Fever out, what you think we ought to put on the flip side? I said, well, since that Slip Away is not going to be a hit anyway, just put that on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he did it.
That's funny. Yeah, the other big break that you folks had, as you, not folks, but you yourself as a soloist, one of the bands in the early 70s that I really enjoyed was a Detroit group called Chairman of the Board,
yeah,
who had that big hit, Give Me Just a Little More Time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that particular group also cut Patches.
They sure did.
Yeah. That's right. Yours was the hit.
Well, the short story behind that is that they called me into the studio. In fact, I was out on the road, and they called me and said, as soon as you finish your dates, come to the studio. We want to play a song for you. And they told me that the Chairman of the Board, that was a Chairman of the Board song, but they wanted to try me out on it. And, of course, all those days, if you tried out a song, it was your money being spent to cut it. It was my money. So they said that if I didn't like the song, I didn't have to do it, because the fact that they were going to take the money out of my money if we cut it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, the song is different from 2 Weeks to Fight. It's different from Slip Away, but it sounds to me to be a good song. I say, and it seems to fit me, you know, by me being from Alabama, you know, and the whole thing. And we went in and we did the song. In fact, we did it so quickly, because they told me that there were about two or three other artists cutting the song for Atlantic. And we did the song so quickly that I didn't even know the lyrics to it. I had to have a guy to whisper the lyrics in my ear while I sang it.
Hmm. Wow. We're talking to Clarence Carter, and as I mentioned earlier in the interview, Clarence is blind, but I'll tell you something, he sees better than many of us, because there was a beautiful singer in the early 70s named Candy Staton, who had a hit called Young Hearts Run Free. You discovered her, and not only discovered her, but you married her.
Yeah, you know, it was a strange thing. I ran into Candy when I was playing a little club in Birmingham. At the time, she was married. She came out and just did a song. Well, you know, I paid no attention to her. She was a girl who came out and did a song, you know, and went on about her business. That was the end of that. But about a couple, two, 3 years later, after I had Slip Away, I played Nashville. And she had a sister at the time who lived in Nashville. And she was visiting the sister, and they both came to my show. And they came backstage to see me when the show was over. And I asked Candy Staton, was she still singing? She said, yeah. And she said, but you know, I'm not with my husband anymore. We're divorced. I said, oh, you are? A pretty girl like you? You know, so it kind of started like that, you know. And but she But more than just being a very attractive lady and a very with a good personality and the whole thing. But not only that, she could sing.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Hall told me later on, he said, when you brought her here to sing, say, I said, now, this is just a pretty girl that done fooled Clarence Carter, say, but I'm going to listen to her anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he really didn't think she was going to be able to sing until he turned on the microphone and started the band to play. He told her he was just going to put down some, you know, songs for her. There was a girl, the R&B artist named Laura Lee.
Mm-hmm.
He told Candy that he was going to let her, you know, just put down some songs, some demos to play for Laura Lee. Well, once Candy started singing the songs, he went and got a brand new reel of tape. And I knew then that she was going to get a contract.
Hmm.
It was just something.
And she was, that song, Young Hearts Run Free, was huge.
Well, no, it wasn't that. It was a song called I'd Rather Be an Old Man's Sweetheart Than to Be a Young Man's Fool.
Oh, yeah, the one that she recorded. Yeah, but I'm just thinking that the song that she did, Young Hearts Run Free, later on, was a huge hit.
Absolutely.
That was one of the big disco era hits.
Absolutely. Some kind of hit record she had on that.
What do you think about the music that's out today? Is there anybody in particular that you really enjoy, or do you long for the days of the 60s and 70s again?
Well, you know, I think I'm still old-fashioned. I think I feel like the 60s, 70s music. I really do. I can't quite get into some of the music they do today. I try to listen to it, but when it gets to the rap part, I'm not into that.
Hmm.
And as a result, there are some of those artists that put out some very good things, but to me, they make the mistake of putting some rap in it, and that's where I turn off.
Hmm. Now, I just want to tell people that the best of Clarence Carter, it's called Snatching It Back from Rhino, is a great collection, and has pretty much all your major hits on it.
That was a good album. I mean, you know, even today when I pick that album up and play it, I can remember all of the different, you know, stories like I was just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
It brings back all of those memories. You look back over your life and you say, where did all of those years go? Where are all of those people today? I was fortunate enough to be asked to come over in Muscle Shoals last, I believe, November, December. And they had a little seminar thing like at North Alabama University about Muscle Shoals, the golden years and all that, and they had me on a couple of panels over there. And I was able to, again, unite with a lot of the musicians and artists that I knew back then.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back home, I went straight and picked up that Rhino album and played it. I said, now, I've seen a lot of these guys again, you know? And it's real good to sit down and recollect sometimes.
Hmm. What was it like? I mean, the 70s were huge for you, and then the 80s came, and the whole music industry changed, and I understand that it was tough for you, but you did make a comeback, and Curtis Shaw was one of the keys to it, right?
Yeah, I went out to Los Angeles trying to find a record deal. I had some songs I cut. And I went out there, and Curtis Shaw, I went to his office and played the thing for him. He said, you know, there's a company that I'd like to shop this to, if you don't mind. I said, I certainly don't mind. I'd be shopped to anybody at this moment, because, you know, when that disco era came, it just wiped people like me out, you know. But anyway, he got out to Venture Records, and they decided, well, you know, he had some records before, we'll take a shot at it and see. But I don't think they really thought they were going to come up with a hit record, but they did, with working on Love Bill. And I had it in my, I was carrying the record around, the song around in my briefcase.
Hmm.
And
yeah, that was from the Let's Burns album that you put out.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah,
that was huge. You got Comeback Artist of the Year that year in 1981.
I got Comeback Artist of the Year, and it was quite thrilling, because, you know, when you've been there and you get there again, I'll be quite thankful for that, because, I mean, you know, that just doesn't happen all the time. usually when an artist is gone, he's gone. That's it. True.
Now, what about Ichabod Records? Are you still with them now?
No. I parted ways with Ichabod way back in 94.
Oh. I know you did like six records with them.
Right. Of course, the biggest song was Strokin'.
Right.
The thing I did enjoy with Ichabod was that they would just simply let me do whatever it is I thought I wanted to sing. I could just come in. I have a studio here at my house. That's why I couldn't understand you when you first called, because I was into putting a song together at that moment. But what happened is that with Ichabod, I could try whatever came to my mind. They didn't mind. That was the freedom that I enjoyed being with Ichabod. You know, I could just, when I would do an album, I'd take it over there, and they just put it on the market. Let's see what it'll do. You know? And I liked that setup. But what brought us to the end of our ways was, you know, like when we put an album out and it sells, I do want my money.
Right. Yeah. As you should have. What are you talking about, wanting money, huh? What do you think of the internet and Napster and all the things that have happened with the music?
Well, you know, I some of that, I guess maybe I haven't quite gotten a real good understanding on what they're doing, because I remember when this case went to court and they ruled something to the effect that the people could download your music and that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm one who, I love the internet. I have a computer here. I have a setup here where I can record in with the computer. I surf the net. I do the whole thing, because I have special kind of programs I can put on the computer, and it will read the screen. Whatever's on the screen, it reads it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I'm able to surf the net. I'm able to do, you know, whatever I want to do on the computer. So I'm an internet person, and I always have believed. I used to tell a lady who works for me all the time, even 3 or 4 years back, that music was going to be big on the internet. I knew it was coming, you know. And even today, I'm attempting to get to be a part of what all of that is, you know, because it's creating and it's going to create a lot of money.
Hmm. I think so too, and I think that my own opinion is if folks download a song from somebody, they're more likely to go and buy the CD anyway.
Well, sometime they will, and sometime they won't. But my true feeling about it is that, Gates makes software, and he doesn't. They won't allow you to copy his software, and that's the same thing you're doing when you download Clarence Carter's music off the internet. You see, to me, it takes away. What needs to happen is each time there is a download, there ought to be a charge of some sort. They need to come with something instead of just, if you gave Ford cars away, they couldn't make any money.
Now, you mentioned to me that you're working on a new music, and in fact, when I called you, I heard it, and it sounded great. when is a new CD going to be coming out?
Hopefully, I can get a CD out. I'm going to project about mid-spring, say maybe April or May. I'm going to give myself that length of time to get it done.
Well, I'd like to maybe talk to you again around then, and maybe we'll help you promote it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I want to thank you so much for coming on to PMPnetwork.com today, and we look forward to speaking to you when the new CD comes out, and remind everybody that the old one, the one that has pretty much all your hits on it, is Clarence Carter, Snatching It Back from Rhino Records. Thanks so much for coming on, Clarence, and continued success and good health.
Well, I do thank you for calling, and let me apologize for not recognizing who you were when you first called, but it's just that when you're in that music, you got to get out of it to get back to the real world.
I understand. Believe me. When you're in the studio, you're in the studio.
Exactly.
I understand. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Slip away somehow.